Hello and welcome to this episode of the Cyclo Edition, the podcast for those looking to go above and beyond in their understanding of the organic literature. I'm Matt Genzink, and I'm joined today by Grace Lutowski and Wesley Swords. The paper we're discussing today is titled Redox Neutral Organocatalytic Mitsunobu Reactions, and it's from the group of Ross Denton, who is an associate professor at the University of Nottingham. His group focuses on the design and development of new reactions and synthetic methods. The paper reports a new phosphorus 5 organocatalyst, which promotes stereospecific nucleophilic substitutions of primary and secondary alcohols. Unlike the original Mitsunobu reaction, which suffers from bad mass efficiency, this reaction produces only water as a byproduct.
So one of the most powerful organic reactions we have access to, and it's one of the first that you'll learn in an organic chemistry course, is the SN2 reaction, in which you can take a halogenated carbon and undergo a displacement reaction with a nucleophile to add to that carbon and lose your halogen as a leaving group. In that case, you form basically a stronger bond typically between the carbon and your nucleophile than you have between the carbon and the halogen. And so that halogen is considered a good leaving group. We have access to, in nature, an abundance of alcoholic substrates. And in that regard, we'd love to be able to do an SN2 reaction in which you can just replace a hydroxide with any given number of nucleophiles. The end of that reaction would be a substituted organic product and water as your byproduct. The kinetics of this reaction end up being very unfavored for this displacement because the carbon-oxygen bond is very strong, leading to a large barrier for displacement. For the SN2 reaction in which you'd be trying to displace your OH group in your alcohol, an alcohol actually ends up being a poor substrate for the SN2 reaction because they're very weak electrophiles. And this comes about because hydroxide is a poor leaving group. In that regard, you need either strong nucleophiles to help undergo this SN2 reaction or alternative means to make the alcohol a better leaving group.
So one attempt to do like a direct SN2 type reaction on secondary alcohols is the Mitsunobu reaction. And this was developed in the 1960s where it uses triphenylphosphine and diethyl azodicarboxylate to do a direct nucleophilic inversion on a secondary alcohol. So this reaction is a very powerful reaction because it proceeds with direct inversion of that stereocenter. So it's highly stereospecific. And the scope of this reaction has been applied through the years to incorporate oxygen nucleophiles, carbon, nitrogen, sulfur containing nucleophiles. So it's very applicable to a wide array of nucleophiles.
So the generally accepted mechanism of the Mitsunobu reaction starts with a nucleophilic attack by triphenylphosphine on the diethyl azo dicarboxylate reagent. So this forms a Zwitter ionic intermediate, which is then protonated by the pronucleophile. The pronucleophile is oftentimes a carboxylic acid. This forms then a phosphonium intermediate, which is attacked by the alcohol. The alcohol undergoes nucleophilic attack at phosphorus, displacing the hydrazine byproduct. And then in the final step of the reaction, the nucleophile attacks at the carbon of the alcohol, leading to the substitution product with inversion of stereochemistry.
So one of the limitations of the Mitsunobu reaction is the fact that you have to use stoichiometric phosphine and stoichiometric diethyl azo dicarboxylate as additional reagents to facilitate this reaction. Therefore, unlike your ideal SN2 reaction with an alcohol, your sole byproduct is water, you end up having the hydrazine from the reduced diazo complex as well as triphenylphosphine oxide or phosphine oxides as stoichiometric byproducts. And that takes the mass balance basically of this reaction or the mass efficiency of this reaction from, you know, ideally all nearly 100% if water is your sole byproduct to 21%.
Yeah, and I think even in addition to like atom economy concerns, the byproducts are also oftentimes hard to separate from the reaction mixture. So basically there are four inputs into this reaction, the two reactants and then the azo compound and the phosphine, which lead to a number of different waste products. Triphenylphosphine is oftentimes just streaks through columns, can be really hard to separate, and the azo compound is toxic and can even be explosive.
So overall, the Mitsunobu reaction does not theoretically need to have the stoichiometric reagents, the triphenylphosphine or the DEAD compound. However, these are used to activate the alcohol reagent to make that alcohol a better leaving group and thus allow a nucleophile to displace it. The triphenylphosphine is used as a reductant in this reaction and shuttles two electrons to the diazo complex, reducing the diazo complex to the hydrazine. But all of this electron motion is just used to eventually get the phosphorus 5 bound to the deprotonated alcohol. And what that does is it just makes that alcohol a much better electrophile and allows the nucleophile to come in and do the SN2 displacement. In theory, you could get away with using some sort of catalyst that would just be able to come in and activate that alcohol.
And I think that's an important distinction because up until a few years ago, many attempts at making this reaction more efficient haven't been aimed at taking out kind of the redox components of this reaction, but they've been aimed at making the terminal oxidant or the terminal reductant catalytic, basically by introducing another terminal oxidant or a terminal reductant.
Right. The thought being that instead of needing to use stoichiometric dangerous or just annoying things to work with, triphenylphosphine oxide or the diazo complex, instead you could use a more mild oxidant or reductant and turn over the reactant that you don't want to work with on a stoichiometric scale.
So there have been a couple key ways that researchers have tried to make this reaction catalytic in the triphenylphosphine and the azo complex. So starting with Patrick Toy's work in JAX that he published in 2006, he used a hypervalent iodine complex to turn over the hydrazine and reoxidize the hydrazine that previously was produced stoichiometrically at the end of the reaction, but using this hypervalent iodide complex can turn it back to the azo complex, and therefore you can use it catalytically. This method was introducing this hypervalent iodine as a terminal oxidant, so even though you now use the azo complex in a catalytic quantity, you have introduced an additional terminal oxidant.
And I think it's important to note here that this was kind of a nice advance in the field because we didn't have to use that azo compound in a stoichiometric quantity, but it still required two equivalents of the hypervalent iodine terminal oxidant, and it required two equivalents of the phosphine. So still there's a need for a terminal oxidant. Still there's a need for the phosphine. A few years later, another group came out with a similar strategy where they used an iron complex to aerobically oxidize the hydrazine byproduct that's formed in this reaction. Very similar strategy, but instead of, like Grace was talking about, using that hypervalent iodine terminal oxidant, they used an iron complex to turn over the hydrazine.
Right, and one of the nice things with this was that they could also use the iron complex itself catalytically, and so you could use hydrazine and iron catalytically, and then you had oxygen as your terminal oxidant, which is by far one of the most prevalent and easiest to use oxidants around.
So both of the papers that we just talked about were trying to turn over the hydrazine that was produced at the end of the reaction to make that catalytic. Up until this point, both of those papers used the phosphine reagent in stoichiometric quantities. So a valuable next step in the progression of this reaction could be, how do we turn over that phosphine? And so a paper in Angevant in 2015 showed a method to do this. So using silanes, they were able to turn over the phosphine oxide that was produced in this reaction. This was a good attempt at making the phosphine reagent also catalytic, but they also introduced the silanes as a stoichiometric terminal reductant. So also in this paper, they try this reaction using a fully catalytic system. So bringing the ideas from the previous two papers with using either the hypervalent iodide species or the iron catalyst with air as a terminal oxidant into the system. And so they turn over both the hydrazine and the phosphine oxide. So this reaction works, but the yields are not as optimized at this point. And so this really just showed the proof of concept that you can have a fully catalytic Mitsunobu reaction.
Yeah, so there is a little bit of controversy with this fully catalytic Mitsunobu reaction. And it brings up an important point when you're looking at developing new reaction methodologies. And that's the idea that when you're looking at developing things that follows a certain mechanism or a specific mechanism, and the Mitsunobu is a kind of a classic example where you have to have stereoinversion at that alcohol if it's a secondary alcohol, you really should test that and ensure that that is something that you're getting. And so in this paper, they wanted to just optimize, you know, the first kind of fully catalytic Mutsunobu. And so they just did initial optimization, but didn't go any further. And so the group that had originally developed the iron catalyst with oxygen reduction system for the azo complex kind of went in and tried to investigate this further and ended up finding out that when you run this fully catalytic Mutsunobu, you completely racemize or nearly completely racemize your secondary alcohols. That suggested is that they're no longer following the classic Mutsunobu mechanism. And what they ended up finding out was that you really did not actually need the hydrazine at all in that reaction, and that the para-nitrobenzoic acid that they were using could in itself be oxidized to drive that reaction forward.
In 2014, Denton followed up these papers with a really innovative approach, which he termed a redox-free approach to the Mutsunobu reaction. So like we've been talking about before, normally triphenylphosphine, which is a phosphorus reagent in the plus 3 oxidation state, is used to generate the active Mutsunobu phosphorus 5 reagent. And this requires a stoichiometric oxidant, which we have been talking about is the azo compound. But Denton had the idea to try to develop a redox-free approach to the Mutsunobu reaction, where the starting phosphorus compound was not a phosphorus 3 compound, but rather was a phosphorus 5 compound. So this means that there would necessarily be no redox changes in the reaction and no need for a stoichiometric oxidant or reductant. So their first attempt at this was to generate a dioxyphosphorane reagent, which is a phosphorus 5 reagent, from triphenylphosphine oxide. And then this stoichiometric dioxyphosphorane reagent could do the Mutsunobu reaction. So this was a really innovative approach, like I said before, but the one problem here is that the phosphorus waste compound was still formed stoichiometrically. In this case, that's triphenylphosphine oxide. And basically, the triphenylphosphine oxide couldn't be turned over in the course of the reaction to regenerate the active dioxyphosphorane reagent.
So this was an important step going forward with the Mutsunobu reaction, as you've basically removed, you know, one of the two, you know, stoichiometric reactions that you need, as well as getting much closer to like your theoretical redox neutral reaction. So that brings us to the paper we're going to discuss today, which Denton has recently published in Science, in which they've now been able to undergo a redox neutral organocatalytic Mutsunobu reaction. So what Denton has done is he's developed a new phosphine oxide, so a phosphorus 5 organocatalyst for the Mutsunobu reaction. This basically has now removed any stoichiometric addition. All you need is a substoichiometric amount of this organocatalyst, and you drive forward the redox-neutral Mutsunobu reaction, and your only byproduct is water.
So looking at the mechanism of this reaction, the phosphine oxide organocatalyst is activated by an acidic pronucleophile. And so then from here, it can undergo cyclization and drive off water, which is the only byproduct of this reaction. This cyclization forms a 5-membered phosphonium salt, which then can be opened by the addition of the alcohol. From there, the nucleophile can substitute, reforming the phosphine oxide double bond and generating your product.
Yeah, one of the important aspects of this organocatalyst is the fact that it has, off of one of the three substituents, a phenyl group. And that OH on the phenyl group is the key factor for forming this cyclo-intermediate and being able to activate and release the oxygen from the phosphine oxide double bond. And so there had been some work in the past that showed that you could do something like this at very high temperatures, but the Denton group went through and optimized a catalyst that would allow them to do this at lower temperatures. They typically ran this in a refluxing toluene or xylene.
The authors also point out that the acid pronucleophile that's used is really important in the dehydration step. So they show that you need a strong enough acid essentially to activate that phosphorus oxygen double bond towards dehydration. But if that acid becomes too strong, there are competing elimination and SN1 reactions that go on. So there's kind of a pKa window where this reaction operates best in. And they settled on dinitrobenzoic acid, which has a pKa of 1.4. It's kind of their ideal acid for this reaction.
One of the important aspects of this mechanism is this loss of water. And one of the things that may not be immediately relevant is the fact that you're generating in situ another very reasonably strong nucleophile that could you know, displace your alkoxyphosphonium salt, and that is just water. And so the way that they run this reaction to ensure that you don't build up too much water is using what's called a Dean Stark apparatus. And so the way that this works is, instead of just attaching your reflux condenser directly to your round bottom flask, instead your reflux condenser is positioned above a secondary container, which typically contains your reaction solvent. So in the case of toluene, you'd have a secondary container that you fill all the way to the brim with toluene, and then you attach a reflux condenser over it. And then right at that edge of where toluene is a flow through back into your reaction flask. And so as you condense water in your reflux condenser, the water will sink below toluene and refill your reaction condenser with extra toluene. And so you're able to remove any generated water from the reaction and keep the reaction under fairly anhydrous conditions.
So to support their mechanism, the authors did a few mechanistic studies that really helped show what was going on in the system. The first one that they did was labeling the oxygen on the substrate and following it to see where the oxygen ends up in the product. And so this proved that the oxygen that was labeled ends up as the oxygen in the phosphine oxide catalyst as the reaction proceeds.
What this supports is the idea that the alcohol is has to come in and bind to the phosphorus organocatalyst, and then the displacement happens opposite or off the phosphine catalyst, and therefore the oxygen 16 that comes in and displaces the alcohol comes from your pronucleophile rather than from something else on the phosphorus catalyst. The next mechanistic experiment that they report really focuses on this idea that the Mitsunobu reaction must conform to the stereoinversion of your secondary alcohol. And so what they look at is kind of studying structural changes to the catalyst. So they run the reaction with no catalyst, their optimal catalyst, a catalyst in which they've replaced the alcohol on the phenyl substrate of the catalyst with a methoxy group, and one in which they've shortened what the ring that would form when they do the cyclization reaction to form their phosphonium salt intermediate. And so what they see is that they only get good stereo inversion. Instead, when they use no catalyst or these changed catalysts, they see much lower yields, around 10%, and mainly retention of the stereocenter. That suggests that these other derivatized organic catalysts are not doing anything in the reaction. They really do need their organic phosphine catalyst to drive the reaction forward.
The authors also tried to observe some of the proposed phosphorus intermediates via phosphorus NMR. So they did this originally just with normal reaction conditions, trying to observe some of the intermediates, and that didn't work. So instead, they tried an alternative activation method using triflic anhydride with their organocatalyst. And with this alternative activation method, they were able to observe the five-membered ring phosphonium salt. And then they added a solution of alcohol to that and were also able to observe a new signal that they attributed to the alkoxy phosphonium salt intermediate that they proposed.
The scope of this reaction shows quite a few different substrates undergoing CO bond formation, CN bond formation, and CS bond formation. They first show a lot of primary alcohol substrates that highlight some of the functional groups that you can place on your alcohol substrate. So this reaction is done in acidic conditions, and even with this, you can withstand nitriles and thalamids and amide functional groups on these substrates. They also show many examples of the secondary alcohols, because this is your classic Mitsunobu reaction where you have inversion of that secondary alcohol. And so many of these substrates just show the esterification of these alcohols.
Yeah, looking at the alcohol scope, like you were talking about, Grace, they also show an alkyl bromide working and an alkyl azide working. Those are kind of interesting cases because those are substrates that may cause some problems in the typical Mitsunobu protocol. In the case of an alkyl bromide, because triphenylphosphine, which is present in the Mitsunobu reaction, can react as a nucleophile to that primary alkyl bromide. And in a similar way, that alkyl azide could undergo a Staudinger reaction with the triphenylphosphine, which could cause a problem. But in this case, there is no phosphorus 3 present, it's just phosphorus 5. So those substrates work well.
And in the secondary alcohol sense as well, they really show that they retain the stereo inversion that you'd expect for a Mitsunobu reaction. If just simple alkyl alcohols, they're able to maintain almost nearly complete enantiomeric excesses. They do see some decrease in most of the cases, but most of them aren't significant. Only when you get to more kind of strained ring structures do you start seeing a drop in either the enantiomeric excess that you get for the inversion, or in a couple of cases where the inversive reaction would be significantly hindered due to the ring structures. For one of them, it was on a steroidal style molecule. They only see retention, but they can still get very good yields and very reasonable retention in those reactions.
One of the main ways that the Mitsunobu reaction has been used in the past is simply in alcohol inversion, and they also show that that works here. So they use 2,4-dinitrobenzoic acid as the nucleophile to invert the stereochemistry, and then they hydrolyze off that nucleophile to, as a product, just give the inverted alcohol.
They mention in this reaction as well that they're able to recover 87% of their catalyst as well as 91% of their acid, which suggests that, you know, if you're doing this on large scale, you can recoup a lot of your catalyst and acid, and, you know, basically ensuring that this is actually a fully catalytic reaction and could then use that further to then drive, you know, the reaction again.
Yeah, and finally, they also show that they can make ethers with this protocol. And they do that by having an alcohol, and the pronucleophile in the ether synthesis is triflic acid. So basically, the triflic acid acts as a pronucleophile to make an alkyl triflate electrophile. And then the remaining alcohol in solution can act as a nucleophile to that electrophile, creating an ether.
Bringing this back out, this is, you know, an interesting reaction to think about now, that you've basically removed almost everything that a Mitsunobu reaction would have typically had, and now only typically have about 10 mole percent of an organocatalyst there. And one of the things the authors highlight in their last paragraph is the fact that you've now gone from a reaction that typically gives you about a 21% mass efficiency to a 65% mass efficiency. That allows this reaction to be considered more applicable to an industrial and large-scale batch synthesis.
Looking forward, one way that the authors could even improve upon this protocol potentially is coming up with future generation organocatalysts where that pKa window for activating the phosphine oxide reagent is not so small, basically allowing less acidic pronucleophiles to be used in the reaction. In the Mitsunobu reaction itself, it requires a pKa, I believe, of around under 15, whereas in this protocol, it's like under 4.
I think just another thing to remember, and we brought this up at the beginning, is another limitation beyond just using stoichiometric reagents in the original Mitsunobu reaction was that those reagents were hard to purify and the azo compound was explosive. And so that was another reason why it would never be used in an industrial process. So this paper then highlights using this catalytically, but it's also a safe reaction to use. And so it'll be exciting to see how industrial chemists implement this in a large-scale synthesis.
And that's our show. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Cyclo Edition. For more information on the papers discussed, we have included a selection of the resources we used in our research at the end of the YouTube video. This was our take on a very interesting paper, and we would love to continue the conversation with you. Please comment below the YouTube video and reach out on social media. You can follow the Cyclo Edition on Twitter, where we will post updates about our next episode. You can find the Cyclo Edition wherever you listen to podcasts and on YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe. We will provide the paper we will be discussing during the next episode in the description of this podcast, as well as on social media a few days before the next episode is released.